busy week for us. As many of you may know, I turned up here yet. I'm not hearing it yet. Keep talking until you hear me here. There we go. Now you can hear me, right? Okay. It's been a busy week for us this past week. We closed on our house here in Stanton on July the 11th. That was not this past Friday, but the Friday before. So our hands had not yet recovered from all the cramped feelings that we get from signing those many documents and papers and initialing here and underlining this. And it would have been easier if we just had our stamp, if we could just stamp our names on there. But our hands are just starting to recover from that. And then we go into this house and we start to paint, and we paint till all hours of the night, late into the night, changing colors from bright orange and purple to more neutral and calm colors. Just as we start to catch up here, we also decide we need to paint the covers, and that's also more work. And as we paint the covers, we find that we're not quite ready yet to move because we still have to pack. And we pack all of our possessions into the boxes that we have, and we begin to begin this process of moving out of our townhouse in Harrisonburg and moving into our new home here in Stanton. So this past Friday evening, we have a U-Haul truck, and we load it up, back it up to our townhouse here in Harrisonburg, and we have a dozen or so people, and we start loading this truck as fast as we can, with as much and you can see that the truck, it wasn't just packed full to the top, but we filled it pretty well. There were quite a few items. You don't realize how much stuff you have until you have to move that stuff. But we packed all our boxes, we packed all our things, and put it in this truck, and we headed south down I-81 to Stanton, Virginia. And yesterday, Saturday morning, we began our new life here in Stanton. Now, this week has been all about change for us. A change of address, a change of location, and a change of almost who we are. Because we are almost defined by where we live. We've almost become different people based on our setting and who we surround ourselves with. This is a new beginning for Sonia and I. We're starting over in a new place. So, change has kind of been the theme for us this past week. Now, as we look at this, the Bible passage that Kathy read for us a few minutes ago, we see that Jesus, too, experienced a lot of change in his life. And Jesus didn't just experience this change. He brought this change about. So I want to look at that passage a little bit, try to pull it apart, and see what we can learn from Jesus about change. Well, I'll take that off, or else you just keep looking at the house. Our scripture begins today with Jesus and his disciples. And they're out doing whatever they do. And the disciples of John approach Jesus. And they ask him, "Jesus, why don't you and your disciples fast? We fast. The Pharisees fast. Fasting is the thing to do. Why don't you fast?" Well, evidently Jesus and his disciples weren't observing some sort of fasting ritual that they were supposed to be observing as good Jews. So the people questioned this. They said, "What's up with that, Jesus? Why don't you do this? Because you're obviously a religious person. So why don't you do the things that we do? Why don't you follow the norms? Why do you have to buck the trend all the time?" And when Jesus comes back and he provides this metaphor for the people, he says, the people at a wedding, they don't mourn while the bridegroom is among them. Okay, well, that doesn't make any sense to me, does it? They don't mourn while the bridegroom is among them. Well, see, what Jesus is saying is that he is like a groom at a wedding. And he's saying that you don't mourn during a wedding. Maybe Sonia mourned during our wedding, of course, but I don't know. But you don't naturally mourn at a wedding. It's a time of celebration. So while the bridegroom is there, you don't mourn over a loss. You celebrate. Now, Jesus uses this metaphor time and time again, that he is a bridegroom, and he is married to his followers, his people, the one that we would call the church. So Jesus uses this metaphor. He says, you don't mourn during the wedding celebration. But he says, there will be a time when these people will be mourning. Already here, Jesus is predicting his death that is to come later in his life. But as for now, while he is here on the earth, his disciples and he are not going to mourn. They're not going to fast. They are going to celebrate because this is a party. And that's his reason why they don't fast. They are here to party, to enjoy themselves, to have a good time. But Jesus doesn't stick with this metaphor very long, does he? He quickly changes gears and changes directions and goes a different way with this. Jesus begins talking about new pieces of cloth. He says, you don't take a new piece of cloth and sew it onto an old garment. Now, a new piece of cloth, whenever you wash it, it's going to shrink a little bit, right? Especially these old cotton shirts that probably many of us grew up wearing. If you wash those and dry those, they end up being a little bit smaller than when you originally bought them. So he's saying, you don't take something new like that and sew it over an old hole in an old pair of pants. Because when you wash it, that piece of cloth is going to shrink. And what it's going to do is it's going to pull at that sewing that you made around there, the hem, the seam, and it's going to tear it out. And that tear that once was bad enough is now going to be even worse. So you don't sew a piece of new cloth on an old garment. But then Jesus goes and he provides another metaphor for the people. He says, you do not put new wine into old wineskin. Now, I don't know why that has been into everybody's house here, but I know that probably none of us have wine and wineskins at our house. We don't keep that on hand too often in the 21st century. Here is 2008. But back in Jesus' day, after they would squish grapes to make grape juice, they would have to find something to store it in. Remember, this was before they had canning. And they definitely didn't have freezers to preserve these things. So what they would do is they would take a goat, and they would take the skin of the goat, cut off the legs, and they would sew it up. Then they would use that to store their grape juice in. And when the grape juice was in there, it was without the presence of oxygen, so it would begin to ferment. And it would make wine. Now, whenever things ferment, they tend to produce gases. When things ferment, they make CO2, carbon dioxide. So if you put grape juice into a wineskin and allow it to ferment, it's going to get tight in there. It's going to expand. That gas has to go somewhere that's being produced. So what it does is it stretches the skin. It makes it tighter. And it makes it a little bit bigger because of all that pressure. Now, if you were to try to take that new wine and to put it into an old wineskin that had already been stretched out, the wine would have nowhere to go. And instead of just stretching, it would burst like a balloon that had been overinflated. So if you were to put new wine into old wineskin, then it would just be waste. It would be lost. So here we have these three metaphors from Jesus. He talks about the bridegroom and how we don't mourn while the bridegroom is among us. And then he talks about this new piece of cloth that we don't sew on old garments. And then he moves one more time to this discussion about new wine needing to go into new wine skin. Now, Jesus doesn't give any explanation for these metaphors that he's using. And he rarely does. He rarely explains his parables or his metaphors. It just leaves people on his day confused and questioning. What in the world is this guy talking about? We don't understand you. And people today still ask these questions. They say, Jesus, what were you meaning when you said this? What are you talking about? New wine and new wine skins. It just doesn't make sense. Why don't you explain yourself? But I think this is ingenious. I think it's great that Jesus doesn't prescribe a reason for why he said the things he said. But he leaves it up to us to interpret what he's trying to teach us. By doing so, it gives us a lot more flexibility to apply these metaphors and parables in different areas in our lives. But it also leaves us an opportunity to make mistakes in our interpretation as well. Now, I believe that when Jesus talked about these things, what he was saying was, the message that he was bringing the reasons that he came to this earth, the things that he was teaching and telling about and living out, were not meant to just be an add-on to the Jewish religion. They weren't just something that you added to the list of the things that you already did. He's saying, you are observing these laws already. You're observing fasting laws, fasting rituals. And what I bring today is not just something else that you have to observe. It's not an add-on to the religion that you're already observing. What I'm bringing today is an entire new way of life for you. Now, Jesus didn't come to begin a new religion. Remember, Jesus was Jewish. And he would have loved, I'm sure, for this religion to remain a part of the Jewish tradition. But what he's saying is he's trying to come to change the way the Jews live, to provide a better lifestyle for them, a better way of life. He's saying, what I'm giving to you today is not just an add-on to what you're already doing. If you just add this on to your current lifestyle, whatever it is, when you add this to the old way of life, it will tear apart. It will pull away, just like a new cloth on an old garment would when you wash it. And when you do this, if you just add this new thing that I'm teaching today to your old way of life, you're going to make it worse for all of us. It's going to pull away. And it's going to make that tear even worse. So that's my understanding of these parables, of these metaphors. Jesus didn't come to give us some add-on to our current life. He came to give us an entirely new lifestyle. An entirely new way of life. Well, as Sonia and I moved into our house, we found there's a lot of things that need adjustment, that need attention, that need us to actually do something about before we can really settle into the home. This past Tuesday night, we did spend the night there on an air mattress. Thought, hey, why not? Sonia needs to drive to work in the morning. Why not save some time on the road? And as we were moving in, we realized that the people that lived there before us, they hadn't lived in the house for about 18 months. The house was on the market that long. So in order to save a little bit of money on the utilities, they turned off a few things around the house, like the water heater. So we didn't have any hot water those first couple of days. So Tuesday before we went to bed, Sonia reminded me to turn on the water heater so she could have a hot shower the next day. Makes good sense, doesn't it? Well, I forgot to do that. And she had a cold shower the next morning. And she made sure to wake me up and tell me, it's not hot enough. There's a good reason for that. I didn't turn the water heater on. Now, I knew what I had to do. It was really simple. All I had to do was turn a little knob, and that water would have been hot for her. So it's not a matter of not knowing what to do. It's just a matter of not doing it. Sometimes, if you want to see results, you have to take the first step. You have to take the initiative to actually do something in order for a final result to take place, to make things move towards that direction, in that direction. Well, Sonia and I really enjoy living here in Stanton, even though it's only been one night. We've enjoyed the couple nights that we've sat on the front porch and talked to neighbors as they've gone by. One guy was riding his bike by. He knew that this house had been on the market for 18 months, and he was excited to see that there were new people living in the house. So he just stopped by, and he started talking to us. Our neighbors who are right inside when you're looking at the house, she thought one day, it's kind of hot, and Kevin's over there working hard. So she brought me over a bowl of ice cream and sat down and talked with me for a while. These are the kind of neighbors that I want to have. These are the kind of neighbors I would like to live by. I'm excited to be living where we're living. I'm excited about the possibilities that we have living here in the city of Stanton. See, before we were almost divided, we had this spiritual life, this religious life here in Stanton, and then our social life was up in Harrisonburg, or down in Harrisonburg, as y'all say. And now, by living in the same place where we worship, we have an opportunity to have friends and religious life and this community all together. We worship and work in the same area. We frequent the local stores and restaurants. We are a part of this community. And that's exciting for me. So it's nice to walk down to the park in the evening and meet people and say hello. I live just up the road here at 914 Spring Hill Road. And they say, yeah, I'm your neighbor. I live right behind you. This is good. It's good for me to feel this welcomeness, this part of the community, being open. But I also know that as I walk up and down the street, that many of the people that I meet there on the street don't go to church anywhere. They aren't a part of any congregation. They aren't members anywhere. They don't really plug in to a community like this small community here at Stanton Mennonite. And as I've talked with these people, I realize that these people are not atheists. It's not that they don't believe in God. It's not that they've lost faith in God. But for so many of them, they've lost faith in the church. They've had bad experiences in their life. They've met Christians that didn't live up to their expectations. They're tired of this false sense of piety that they get from people that claim to be Christians, that do one thing and then do another, say one thing and do another thing. People that don't practice what they're preaching. We call those people two-faced. We call them hypocrites. And that's not a term of endearment. That is a bad thing. Now, I think that Christianity in our country is in a decline because so many people have not seen the things that they read in the Bible practiced in the people that claim to be followers of Jesus Christ. They look at those that claim to be Christians and they say, why are you not doing the things that you are claiming that you believe? Why are you not following this man that you claim to be following? This is turning people off left and right. Why don't you do the things that you claim you believe? I think a big problem that we have is that we sometimes try to sell Christianity to people. Like it was something that we could just tell them a few things and they accept that part. And then they add it on to their lives. We tell people that, yes, you're a sinner and I'm a sinner. And I believe that. We are all sinners. Nobody's going to deny that we are sinners. We have all made mistakes and fallen short of the glory of God. Nobody here would deny that. Nobody out on the streets would deny that either. Nobody claims to be perfect. But then we go in and we say, all you have to do is say this little prayer. Add that onto your life. And everything is golden. You don't have to worry about anything else. So people say, yes, I can do that. I'll say the prayer. And then they go on living the rest of their life like nothing else has changed. They say, well, I'll pray to God that He improves my marriage. And then I'll go home and I'll continue to beat on my wife. And I say, what, God? Why isn't my marriage improving? They say, I'm going to pray to God that He delivers me from the pain and the sorrow and the hurt of alcoholism. But yet they go to the bars every night. And they say, why, God? Why haven't you delivered me from this? But you see, it's like that knob on our water heater. You can have the best of intentions, but until you turn that knob, nothing happens. You can know what you need to do to change your life. You know what you need to do to seek God's help. But until you actually try to do something about it, perhaps nothing will happen. Now, I'm not saying that God can't move in miraculous and wonderful ways in our lives, but sometimes we just need to take responsibility for our own lives. Jesus did not come bringing this message as an add-on to our current lives. He said, if you sew a piece of new cloth on an old garment, it will tear away and make the whole thing worse than it ever started out to be. And I think whenever we say that Christianity is just an add-on to our regular lives, that we can just go on living the way we have been living without changing anything, that is like sewing a new piece of cloth on an old garment. It will tear away. People will see that and they will just get disappointed and discouraged. And the whole thing will turn out worse than it started. Christianity is not an add-on. It is an entire way of life. Well, as Sonia and I have moved into the city of Stanton, we have realized that this is a new wineskin for us. We are in a new place, in a new time. This is what is containing us. The city of Stanton is our surrounding. It is like the wineskin that contains us at this time. And I believe that we have the new wine for this new wineskin.
I'm not saying that just me and Sonia have the new wine for this new wineskin. I'm saying that we as a collective body, Stanton Mennonite Church, have the new wine that this new wineskin is so desperately in need of. We have a message that this community is just hungering for, thirsting for, and so desperately in need of. Now, if we look at our Anabaptist history, Anabaptism began almost 500 years ago. And it was dedicated to this idea that Jesus wasn't just someone to be believed in, but Jesus was somebody to be followed every day and every way in your life. This is what we call radical discipleship. It's not just believing in Christ. It's following Christ in every way. So, we as Mennonites today in the 21st century, we try to live this out. We try to live as Jesus lived, to love as Jesus loved. And we try to apply this in every way in our lives. We try to show people that we have no other authority that we will bow down to. We have no other priority before God. We have no other responsibility that comes between us and God. There is nothing else that comes before God in our lives. We are first and foremost kingdom-minded. There's nothing to come before us and God. If you want to pledge your allegiance to something else, then you cannot pledge your allegiance to God first and foremost. This is radical discipleship. Now, Mennonites are also known for frugality, living simple. Some people would call Mennonites stingy. Mennonites love thrift stores. Gift and Thrift, Goodwill, the Salvation Army. These are places that if you walk into, maybe a large portion of those people would be Mennonites, because there's something about this religion, this denomination that pushes simplicity, simple living. Why buy something new if you can buy it used for a fraction of the cost? That money then could go to work for the kingdom of God in some other way. But we live in a society that is completely opposite-minded in that way. We live in a society that says we need to make more money. We need to build bigger houses. We need to get as much power as possible. Now, there are people that are outside of the church that look at this. They see Christians that are building bigger and bigger houses, million-dollar mansions. And they look at this and they say, hey, wasn't your leader, Jesus Christ, homeless? Wasn't he poor? When he had to pay the temple taxes, he had to send his disciples out fishing to get a little bit of money to pay that temple tax. And foxes have dens, birds have nests, but Jesus didn't have a home. He didn't have a place to lay his head. Yet we as Christians think that it's okay to build million-dollar mansions, to have bedrooms that we've never even been in, yet have brothers and sisters down the street, hungry, thirsty, naked, without a home. You see the discontinuity here. You see why this would be troubling for people outside of the church. They say these Christians are being hypocrites, bigots. They're not thinking Christian-wise, not thinking kingdom-mindedly. So that is turning people away. But yet we as Mennonites, we're not perfect. We have this message, though, of simple living. It's been said that we must live simply so that others might simply live. And this is attractive to people outside of the church. This is a part of the new wine that we have for the wineskin of Stanton. We as Anabaptists, as Mennonites, have had this message that we must continue to convey to the people around us. Because I believe it will be attractive, and I believe it is something that all people need to hear. Jesus didn't come to bring this new belief, this new religion, this Christianity, as an add-on to your life. It is an entirely different lifestyle. Now, we've been living in a time of great warfare. For the last 5 years, we've had this war on terrorism, war on terror in Iraq. And I really don't know what it's all about, to tell you the truth anymore. I don't know why we continue to fight. There's been over 4,000 American soldiers that have been killed in Iraq. There have been over 1 million Iraqis that have been lost. And I don't know why. I think a lot of the United States, a lot of Americans are looking at this war and they're getting tired of it. Another death. Why? But we as Anabaptists know that there are other alternative ways to go about bringing peace, to go about relieving people of the terror of terrorism. Ron Sider, who is an Anabaptist and teaches at Eastern University, has begun a program known as Christian Peacemakers Team. And Christian Peacemakers Team have had a presence in Iraq for over 5 years before this war began. And they're working through alternative methods to try to bring about peace, to dissolve terrorism, to reconcile people with one another. And in a society that is getting tired of hearing about the wars that go on, about the people that have lost their lives, I think this is appealing to those kinds of people. I know it's appealing to me to find other ways to bring about peace, other than going and combating with other people and being involved in war. Jesus didn't come to add something onto our lives. He came bringing an entirely different lifestyle. And I think that we as Anabaptists have a new wine for the wineskins here in the city of Stanton. Now back in our house here in Stanton, we've had some problems with this water heater. And it's not that it's not functioning well, but it's just that it takes a little bit of time to get used to. That first day, whenever I did turn on the water heater, I gave it a few hours to warm up the water. Then whenever I took my shower, I realized that I hadn't turned it up high enough. It was still pretty cold. And even just this morning, I still realized that I could probably turn it up a little higher. It's still a little cold. It's going to need some constant adjustment. It's going to need some tweaking from time to time to get the temperature just the way we want it. But we need to keep doing this if we want it to be where we want it to be. It's not something that you just set one time and leave it there and assume it's going to be perfect for all of eternity. I think the same thing goes with our message as Anabaptists. We need to be constantly tweaking the things that we preach and teach and live out. The Anabaptists 500 years ago didn't necessarily get everything right. And they didn't necessarily preach the message that was appropriate for our time and day, here almost 500 years later. We need to be looking at what we're doing. We need to be looking at our programming, looking at how we live out our faith, and how we preach and teach our theology, our understanding of who God is. And we need to be constantly adjusting that, tweaking it, turning it just a little bit, so that we can try to be relevant for today's society. Now, I'm not saying that we change the message. I'm not saying that we change the message that there's some other way other than Jesus. I'm not saying that we be inclusive and pluralistic. But I just think that there's different ways that we need to convey our message. And we need to be constantly adjusting that, tweaking it, turning it just a little bit, making it relevant for today's society. So here we have Jesus bringing these messages, these metaphors to the people. He says, I bring a new piece of cloth. Don't you dare sew it on this old garment. Because if you do, it will tear away and make things worse. He's saying, I bring you new wine. Don't you dare put it in those old wineskins. Because if you do, it will burst. And it will just make a mess for other people to have to clean up. Jesus did not bring an add-on to our lives. But what he brought is an entirely new lifestyle. An entirely new way to live. Now, that way of life is not necessarily easy. It is the narrow way, and few people will choose to go that way. But if we truly call ourselves followers of Jesus Christ, if we truly wish to follow Him in both word and deed, we must choose that narrow way. I believe that we, as Anabaptist Mennonites, have new wine for the wineskins of Stanton, Virginia. I think that it is us, we are called upon to deliver that new wine to the people. Because Jesus did not come to bring an add-on. He came to bring a new way of life. Will you please join me in prayer?